You are listening to I Thought I Heard a Sound podcast.
You ready to die, little girl?
Yes.
Kill Outers.
Tells you when it's going to be recorded. Okay.
Yeah. I was literally just about to say, I'm hitting record now, but I didn't need to because Zoom did it for us. Yeah. So you're not in New York anymore, right? Like you moved.
We're just right outside. Yeah. It's just too expensive to live over there. So we're just like right outside the city now, but we're close enough that like, I mean, we're in there all the time. And we play shows there.
Okay. No, I thought you had moved to Pennsylvania.
We were in Pittsburgh during quarantine for a little while with some friends. Our friend's Machine Girl. We were hanging out there for a bit.
Okay. Yeah. I actually wanted to talk to you a little bit about that because it seems like a lot of people are starting to get pushed out of like New York and San Francisco and are trying to find space for themselves, you know, elsewhere. And Pennsylvania definitely seems to be, you know, catching a lot of them. But also Pennsylvania seems like it's coming up in sort of, and it's becoming sort of a tech hub in itself. So have you experienced any sort of adverse effects that sort of the tech boom that's going on in, you know, the Quaker Oats country?
I mean, literally, like when we were out there, we were just in the house. It was like before vaccines still. And everything. And it was the cases were going up and up and they were going up there and everywhere. And it was still like where you only went outside, like if you like had to go get like food and shit. And it was snowing like every day. It was like the middle of winter. So I was in Pittsburgh, but I didn't really experience Pittsburgh. Like, you know, we weren't going out or anything like that. I still don't know much about Pittsburgh. Crazy. Yeah, we were super, super quarantined out there when we were out there.
I'm glad that you had a place to stay at least. I mean, like losing your house during the pandemic, I feel like that was like the worst case scenario for a lot of people. Like at a time where you had to be, especially earlier on, where you had to be quarantining somewhere.
Move to get out of there. Like maybe we could have, I don't know. I don't know how we would have made it work because we were already at our wit's end, just like trying to balance making music and working like as many like minimal hours as we can with our service jobs. Cause we were just so like burning out from it that we were like, I can only, you know, like we could have tried to just keep working our service job. Well, actually we both lost our jobs too.
Oh, no.
At the same time, but they reopened. But when we left, we're like, oh, we don't even have next month's rent. So like, we got to get the hell out of here. So
yeah,
it's pretty crazy, but whatever. It's like, right, like we realized that living like that was just so crazy, you know. It's like when you're like in your 20s and shit, you can kind of do it, and then you get older and you're like, this is nuts. Like you can't save any money out there like trying to do me. Yeah, it was just too crazy.
Yeah, life doesn't get cheaper as you get older.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Speaking of growing up, your debut with this project Kill Alters is very much about your childhood. It seems like, you know, it seems like, or as I understand it, the basis of the project was cutting up these old tapes, old family videos. Yeah. Or not videos, but cassette tapes, right?
Yeah. Mostly there's a few videos, but it's mostly like hundreds of cassette tapes.
Wow. Yeah. So these were mostly made by your mom, right?
Oh yeah. All the tapes were made by my mom, and it started where it was really like cut into the recordings and they were very experimental. And then when I was making more song-based stuff, there'll be just like snippets of it, like poking through more. Like we've done many different variations of like exploring with the tapes. And then we had a weekly process, which was called like the Kill Alters Archives, where we'd put up like a recording a week, just like picking one tape, and making music around it. And it was a very fun like exercise. And we did that for like about a year and then on and off after that.
How many hours have you been through? How many hours of tape have you reviewed for the project?
I mean, we've tried to literally sit and digitize all of it, but it was just so time consuming that we've maybe digitized a quarter of it. And there's still just so many tapes. And now, like, I try to, as I digitize them, like, organize and label it and put like a little like sticker on the ones that I already digitized, but it's kind of all in one box right now.
Would you mind sort of talking me through how these tapes were created? Because I've heard the story through press outlets a couple of times, but it's still a little unclear to me. These were tapes made by your mom. Why was she making all these tapes?
She's always been that way. She's just always been documenting her life. I mean, really, she always talks about how she always wanted to like be a singer and get discovered, or like, you know, during that time it was about like getting discovered and like, you know, she really wanted to become like a well-known singer or pop star or something. When she started it, she was like 17 or 18, but really, I mean, there's a lot of noise on the tapes. And also she wanted to be a comedian. So there's tons of skits. Like anytime she would be hanging out with her siblings or like a friend or whatever, there'd just be a tape of her like doing skits with them or like telling jokes around them and a lot of that. And then her just singing in front of like a little tape machine or whatever. So there's karaoke tapes. Cause then she started going to like karaoke bars like in the 90s, and what they would do is when you would like sing a song, they would give you a tape, you know. So then she had her own little karaoke machine that you used to buy. It was like this big box with like left and right, and you dubbed tapes yourself. So she brought her own karaoke machine, and then she just started like singing and dubbing on there, and then making like compilation of all her karaoke songs from the karaoke bars and festivals. And so there's a lot of that. And then just us just talking or just like leaving it on, and then just she just going about her day or whatever, and you just hear noise like washing dishes or like yelling, like heard my dad fighting, like she'll record that, you know. So I don't know. Yeah, she was always just, and then she had a video recorder for a little while, and there's a few tapes, but then she ended up like selling that like within a year, because in the 80s, I guess, I don't know how they got one of those, but she got one and then she like sold it. She needed the money, I guess. So there's not too many. I wish there was more VHS tapes, but there's not too many of those.
Okay. So she was just recording her daily life. This was just.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Even when she was in St. Vincent, there's like three tapes. She was born in St. Vincent and in the Grenadines, which is like a small island. And there's like three tapes of even back then, when she was really young. And there's one that was like so startling to me with her just like locking herself in the bathroom in the shower, and she's like screaming because she didn't know what she had then, but she had Tourette's. And this is one of the earliest tapes. Like she had Tourette's, and she was like, she had to hide it from her family because no one knew what it was. So they would like demonize her in a way, and like they thought she was possessed, even some people. So she didn't know what was going on with her. So there's one, she would put the shower on, like she would hold in all her like tics or whatever, and she would put the shower on in the bathroom and just do all her screams and noises. So there's just like a long tape of that with like shower and just like crazy like noises coming from her.
So do you think that this was like her trying to understand her condition or trying to like process it in some way?
I don't know if she thought of it like that when she was 17 or whatever. She just had this thing to record. I don't think she thought like, I want to know, you know, what this, she really just thought she was just crazy because that's what her family told her. She didn't know what it was. It wasn't until one of her sisters became a nurse. And when they slowly came to the States, one of her sisters got to go finish high school and then go to college. She was then looking into it for my mom, and took her to a doctor one day that diagnosed her. And then she finally had a name to what was going on with her. And it was such a relief for her to know that it was Tourette's, because before that it was just like, you're crazy. Why are you making sounds? Are you, you know, are you possessed? Or, and then the movie Exorcist came out, And then she really thought something was wrong with her. And even her family was like, you know, is she possessed, you know? Down. So then, and then her Tourette's, like she said, manifested to where she would make those sounds, you know, like there's a lot of like weird sounds of her like doing like low grunts, because anything like that was a trigger, and then she would have to do that. And yeah, it's really, it's hard to explain.
Okay, so she would like, she would hear like people talking in tongues or something, and then have to mimic it to kind of get past it.
Or if she saw or heard of the movie Exorcist, and if somebody came to her and said, oh, you're possessed, then she, those sounds would stick in her head, and then she would repeat those things, like having to relieve an itch, you know.
Okay, so this is this is all on those tapes.
There's a few tapes with just that, and then there's like other ones again where she just leaves the tape running, and you could hear her having like a Tourette's episode, which is like vocal sometimes, so it's like really loud, and it just sounds like someone kind of screaming, or you know, like repeating words. And it's not like the typical, it's weird because I haven't seen a movie yet that has been able to really emulate Tourette's. It's always like somebody screaming "fuck you," you know, out the window or whatever.
Right. But yeah.
Some people might have that, but hers was not like that. And I haven't seen anyone that really has Tourette's that is like that, where they just scream "fuck you," you know, or like call somebody a name or something, you know.
Right. Where they're just, where it's literally just them swearing.
It's always like this person swearing, you know, sometimes. But it makes sense that they would think that, because a lot of times it's like the tics will be something that you're not supposed to do or you're embarrassed of. Like if somebody, like if she was making a gesture that looks like she's picking her nose, and like somebody saw her and thought she was picking her, then it would be like she has to do that. But yeah, it's like she has to touch her nose again, like 1,000 times or whatever.
No way. Oh my god. It's really fucked up. Yeah, that's like torture. Oh my god.
Yeah. Painful. Like definitely, like her body would be exhausted just from doing like the strenuous like movements and stuff like that, that she would have to repeat until whatever itch was relieved, you know.
Until she was somehow able to get past it. That's really interesting. So how did you end up in possession of all these tapes?
She started giving them to me. She started sending me home, because she would put all mementos, and it wouldn't just be tapes. I mean, she would hold on to, she's not a hoarder, but she likes to save mementos and stuff. So she saved my teeth that fell out, my locks of hair, like things like that. So she would like send me home sometimes when I would visit, like with stuff. And then the only thing I was like fascinated with was like the tapes, you know, like I'm like, I don't want all my freaking drawings and stuff from when I was a kid and shit. Like, but she would give me a little box. She's like, take this with you. Like little things, because she had so much of it. But then I started like getting into the tapes, and I started listening to them. And I found, yeah, like me and Nico's, I think in a few other interviews, like we talked about the first tape that really we were drawn to was the Love Me or Murder Me tape, which is like her doing this weird long song. And it's on the record at the end. That's like pretty much her recorded. And there's another version of it where we just put kind of like ambience in the background, but that's like her recording.
So this album is definitely her fault. Like the whole Kill Altars project is definitely her fault, because she gave you all these tapes. Yeah.
Definitely was the beginning of, and then I had ideas for music aside from that. And I had to like, just make them work together, like tie that in, you know, because I make music, I'm not like archivist or whatever.
So has she listened to Armed to the Teeth? Like have you presented it to her?
It's hard for her to really like sit down. I mean, she has a lot of ailments still and stuff. It's hard for her to, and like a lot of anxiety. It's hard for her to just like, I couldn't really say, Mom, let's sit down and like just listen to this full record or whatever. But I definitely gave her a copy, and like when I go over there, I'll play stuff for her. But I don't think she sat down with the whole record and like listened from front to back. But she knows she's like a big part of Kill Altars, and I have like, I'll play her the parts that she is definitely like featured in it, so that she's like, that's me, oh my god, like, because sometimes she'll remember certain things, but it's so much stuff, you know, whatever, she wouldn't remember everything. So she'll hear a part and she'll be like, that's me? No, yeah, oh my God.
How would you describe her response then to the record of the parts that she's heard?
She thinks it's really cool. She just thinks it's like so cool. Because I'll tell her too. I'm like, see, you're a star now. Like you got, because she just always wanted to be heard and stuff. So she's really like stoked about it.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, if I were featured on any record, I don't know how I'd feel about it, but yeah, it's cool that she feels good about having contributed to this process and been part of this album. Yeah.
Yeah, even the stuff that's sensitive, because a lot of it's funny, but you have the parts like the part where she's talking about my father, he hit me over the head as a kid, like stuff like that, you know, it's like kind of sensitive. But I mean, ultimately, she has like such a open sense of humor and stuff that she is, when she meets people, she's just so open, you know, she like, this is her and she doesn't hold anything back. I mean, the first thing she wants to do, like whenever a friend meets, like if I brought a friend over, because I have like brought, we did a video once, we tried to do a Kill Alters video. So I had two of like my girlfriends come over or whatever. And the first thing she wanted to do was like, we do a psychic reading with them and like ask the most intimate questions. So really that's her, you know? So she's all about that, you know? And that's why I think she like, again, she makes these tapes, like I think ultimately hoping that somebody will hear her, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So you've kind of fulfilled her dream in that regard.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
How do you account for like the really extreme reactions that people have to the album? Because I feel like there is just a really like a wide range of reactions. Some people really love it. Some people are just shocked by it. Others can't seem to handle all the different things you have going on. How do you account for just this variability of response?
I mean, I've mostly gotten good responses because of the bringing up like just the part of it where there was sexual abuse going on, like, and I kind of like talk a little bit about that and like in the past, and people have come up to me like saying like, you know, your music has really touched me, I feel like, and in the lyrics and stuff, like I, you know, not blatantly, but people have connected with that stuff more. So people never really come up like, oh my God, your mom's so crazy or like whatever, like they'll laugh about some of the funny parts in the tape. I haven't had any like extreme, like, oh my God. Like there was one like music video that I did that's very, it's the VHS and it is like just crazy because it looks like I'm living in a dungeon, like this really like fucked up like apartment. And it's like, oh my God, like it looks scary, you know? So that's the only one where people like, this shit's like fucked up and scary. But other than that, people have just been like, I connect with your music, you know, like I was also like, I'm also a survivor of sexual abuse, like childhood sexual abuse and neglect and stuff. So yeah, those are always like amazing and touching to me to hear people, you know, feel connected to it in that way.
Because trauma is like a part of the album, but it's not like the whole story. How, like, what was your goal in sort of approaching trauma in the way that you did on this release? Because it, like, it's definitely there and you can kind of hear it throughout the record, but it doesn't seem to really stop there. It's not like fetishizing your pain in any kind of way. And it definitely feels like touching on a lot of other aspects of your life. So yeah, I was wondering about your approach. Yeah.
I mean, this album was not really about the trauma at all. Like, I really feel like I've gone so past that, and maybe like the music has really helped me. I feel like I don't need to look back at a lot of that stuff. I've forgiven, you know, people from my past, even. I'm not angry really at anybody anymore. So this record was not about the trauma. This was about like harnessing your power record, you know, like okay, I have the tools now, you know? So yeah, it was more so the first record, like I was really exploring and like just coming, going through that and like dealing with things and trying to understand things. And, but this one was really more so about the music, you know? It was like a process, a learning curve, like musically, and then still tying in the tapes and stuff, but more in a fun way. Like I felt like this was more about having fun and listening. And I even got like to a point even where I was like tired of sorting through that, because I didn't want to have to go there anymore at one point. You know, I'm like, I need to move forward. You know, I can move forward now. I don't need to be in the past anymore.
No, and I definitely got that sense from the album, is that it definitely was a reflection on your past, but you were not stuck there. And there is just a lot of really crazy stuff happening. But it's creative. It feels like sort of the end point of, you know, a sort of a long process, which as I understand, the album did take some time to, you know, ultimately put together, like maybe longer than you expected.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it wasn't, again, like we're sitting for 3 or 4 years, like working on it. We had a lot of stops and starts and things that got in the way, getting like the financial stresses and just like having to work and stuff made it really hard to like get a real kind of like a flow going, you know? So we had a lot of things like coming at us while we're trying to make this record. It wasn't like we got to hide away and like sit, you know, and like be in the studio every day, but things aren't sounding the way we want them or whatever. So we just worked on it forever. It was not like that at all. It was really like when we were in Pittsburgh again, like during quarantine, where we finally got the chance to have a daily practice with it and finish it.
Have you ever wanted to just have like a year where you would just spend every day in the studio and not have to worry about any other aspect of life? Yeah. Or does like that Nick, okay,
actually, he just popped in, but yeah, love, we talk about this all the time, right? I mean, isn't that what most, like the dream, you know, for most people that make their art, or they want to be able to do it, you know, like 100% and always. And we've managed, I have more time than I've ever had. I make it so because I know that this is a very short time on this earth, right? And I could let the other things stand away. But I know that ultimately I'm happy, like when I'm able to carve out time, and I'll do it no matter what, anyway, I have to, you know, even if it's at the end of the night or whatever, just get an hour in or whatever, just to like be with music or whatever as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to ask just because I figured that would be like a dream scenario for you, but you know, you don't know until you ask. I personally, when it comes to, you know, the stuff that I do creatively, like, I don't know that I could do it full time. Like I do need to have like some connection outside of you know, my artistic pursuits. Course. Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. Like, I mean, I also like to, I want to like be traveling all the time and stuff either. I am good with like being, I could be like working in the studio, like daily, and probably be fine with that. And just be able to like go outside, take my walks and stuff like that. I'm not like, I need vacationing. We never vacation, you know, like for us, vacation is like, you're trying to run away from something, you know, or whatever. I mean, traveling the world is great. Like, of course I'm not, but we've never been like, even like, I don't know. Also, cause we're like too broke or whatever, but I'm sure if we have more money, we'd probably be traveling a lot more, but.
Right. I do, yeah.
Like, I went to LA for the first time. Like, Nikos is touring with Machine Girl. So, I mean, I went to LA for the first time. I liked it out there. I would want to go back. There is a lot more of the world I do want to see. I hope in my 40s, I am traveling more. I really haven't traveled a lot. And me in my 40s, that will be my time. I get to see some more of the world.
Okay. But you would want to see it for work. You wouldn't want to just go there and have exactly, a couple of drinks at a hotel or something.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But that's the thing about touring that is, I, you know, is that a lot of times you're not gonna see, you're gonna be in one place for a little while. You're not gonna be really hanging out too long either. So I'm like, I don't know. you don't really get to spend much time in the city you're in when you're touring. If you're touring a lot, you're like in a different city every day, right? So that's also a different thing. I would like to go somewhere like for, I would like to go to LA and just hang out or whatever. Or
yeah,
it doesn't have to be LA, but I did go there. That was like, I've never been there. And I was like, oh, it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe for a residency at some point, maybe you can score one of those.
Yeah. Maybe hopefully it'd be outside this country ultimately.
Yeah. Where would you want to see? Like what is what's a part of the world that you would want to see? Especially if it was for work.
Oh, I mean, there's so many places. I mean, different parts of Europe, of course. I mean, Nikos is from Cyprus. Cyprus is beautiful. It's really disconnected from everything, though, but I kind of like it.
Have you been?
It's just so beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. I've been with him a couple of times, and it's, or like three or four times, and it's so beautiful. It's a really small island. And I mean, you want to drop off the face of the earth, like, that's one of the places to go. It's just really, and the food is amazing. And I mean, you have the beautiful Mediterranean Sea there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it would be a really good place to make an album.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Totally.
So what were, if you don't mind me asking, and I know this is a super basic question, but what were some of the reference points in terms of sound for this record? You know, it seems like there's a lot of rave, a lot of different types of electronic music. What were some of the sort of direct influences that you were pulling from?
Well, we made a playlist called Dreamy Lushy, and it's a playlist of a lot of 80s and 90s like pop music that my mom would listen to, that I remember her listening to. And I really connected when we were recording vocals. We were struggling to really, because again, I said there was like a lot of stops and starts, and I had to reconnect with the record at one point. And it was hard to really get back to, because I had been exhausted from it. Even just like, oh, here we go again, we have to like bring life into this record that we've been working on for so long, and we know we have to finish it, because I know I would not, it would be a regret if I didn't finish it. So somehow, one way or another, we have to fucking make this shit happen. And it was weird because I never really like worked that way before. I'm always like in the moment, in the flow. I, you know, just let things breathe. I'm not like meticulous about, but this record really needed me to be there in the moment, like when I was singing the lyrics, you know, because we were really happy with the lyrics. But when we had recorded it a few times and just like, something's not right here. It's like, you can't even point it out, but it's like, it feels disjointed from the record. And you know why? It's because I wasn't really there. I was already like, my head was already in the future. Like, I want to do all this stuff, you know, but I had to come back to it because we had worked so hard at one point to get it to where it was. And the lyrics were very important to both of us, that in order to finish, I had to figure out, how am I going to really like feel this right now, you know? So I don't know how we started making the playlist, but I also wanted to like get my voice feeling better as well. Because when I was playing live, I wasn't like thinking a lot. I mean, wasn't playing live for a while because of quarantine. But before that, I was like doing a lot of yelling and screaming vocally. And I was like, do I even know how to use my voice? Like the voice that I connected with as a child, like my singing voice that feels like me, you know? So I had to really like, not relearn, but just connect with the music, connect with my voice, like feel naturally. And I started listening to a lot of music and I put this playlist together, Dreamy Lushy, and we started listening to it and I started singing with it daily. And I just started feeling like the emotions of a lot of these songs and a lot of them were like about love. So it was like putting me in a different place and just feeling gushy, you know, like, and it really helped when we were, you know, finally sitting down and like recording. And Nikos was really good. He worked with me through that because we had to be honest with ourselves, like, is this working or not? And it was a struggle to getting that place. That was the last thing we had to do. Like after all the music we felt good about, it was like, okay, recording the vocals is a separate thing now and it's got to be right. And yeah, and it was a lot of fun. It made it fun again. Like we started having a lot more fun with it because we were so stressed out about it. It became like, it's music, like, you know, but we got so stressed about the record because we felt like at that point too, it was all we had. Like we had so much stress like around us and it was like, this music was supposed to be like the savior of everything. But then the record became stressful too because it wasn't getting done and just had all this like weird energy around it. And like getting back into listening to music like from the time, like as you know, as a child, the good times, because there were a lot of bad times, but I feel like it really brought like a lightness to it. And yeah, and it was really fun for us, like finally. And then vocals sounded better to us and we like started really like, okay, we found our stride, now we cannot get interrupted, this is the mood, let's fucking push this through and finish it.
I find it interesting that you relearned how to sing, or you sort of discover your voice again by singing along with, by singing along with 80s pop songs. And that part of why your mom was making tapes, the tapes that sort of formed the basis of the record, was her karaoke sessions. Mm-hmm. Had you thought about that? Like it, that overlap? Yeah. So what do you make of that overlap?
Yeah, I feel like reconnecting with that and with her just brought me back to like the lightness and like the beginning of why I like started loving music and doing music, you know. And it was through that, like really connecting with my voice ultimately, because I feel like I've gone through periods where it's like I, especially after going through all the trauma stuff, I wanted to like be hard, you know, like be hard. And then I just started like, I don't know, there was like feeling a little disconnection from my true core, you know.
But you feel like you got it back, and part of it was kind of doing like private karaoke sessions.
Yeah, pretty much. And it helped warm up my voice too, because I had to strengthen my voice again. I had to like do warm-ups and stuff because also my voice felt tired and I was running out of air because I hadn't used it like that in a long time. So I got really into like being like freaking Bruce Lee with my voice, like how it's a muscle, right? So how can I stretch this and get it to where I want it to be and like hit the notes that I hear in my head and stuff like that. It's like a real exercise, and the music helped. And I had to find music that like fit my voice, and a lot of that stuff fit my voice really well. And we also, it helped us like find the like right effects for my voice that sound nice, because we started like wanting to dry up my voice and stuff and do stuff that we were hearing, like maybe where we're like, we want to sound like this, but then it just wouldn't fit my voice. And then so going through, if you listen to a lot of like, even like Cocktail Twins and stuff like that, there's a lot of, you know, it's airy sounding and it sounds nice on. So we started using a lot of effects, like, ooh, okay, let's find effects that sound like this song or whatever. And it's like, yeah, that sounds nice. I mean, of course, when you add like reverb and stuff, we didn't want to like, it's not like we oversaturated with reverb, you know what I mean? But we've totally got away from using it because it felt like a crutch, you know, like earlier when I would like just blast reverb on my voice. It wasn't like that. It was just like using touches of little delays and reverbs on my voice rather than like crunching it up and stuff. It just sounded better on my voice.
Yeah, I mean, your voice sounds really dynamic on the record. I know you mentioned Cocktail Twins. What were some of the other songs that you were practicing along with? Get ready for this record.
I mean, like Duran. I mean, let me look. I have like Duran. Even I'm trying to pull it up right now. There's so much stuff. Brain's blanking right now. But what else? Like freaking. I mean, there's a lot of one hit wonders on there too. That's why I'm like. It's like, I know the songs, but I wish I could pull it up right now. But Taylor Dane, I mean, like, do any of the Debbie Gibson, freaking Tiffany, like, yeah, a lot of stuff like
okay.
that.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, definitely not like stuff that you would hear at like a noise show or like like a digital hardcore show or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Wait, I'll just pull up, like even like Susie and the Banshees, like some kind of punkish stuff, but it's still Company B. I mean, the Cover Girls, Olivia Newton-John even.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Very melodic stuff. Oh, that's cool.
Belinda Carlisle. Yeah. There's a lot.
Yeah. That's very cool that, you know, such conventional pop music mm-hmm. ended up being a part of a very unconventional record, if you don't mind me saying.
yeah, it's a weird one. It's like needs people's attention still, you know, and especially there's like skits on there and it's long. It's like, I get how it needs, it's not like a pop record that's like, oh yeah, like these 2 minute fucking bangers and stuff. And I love that shit too. I still like want to do that shit, but this, it's like, it needs attention.
Yeah, I was wondering if and I hope that this isn't getting too deep into, you know, personal stuff. You can stop me if it does. But while you were sort of reviewing the tapes, did you sort of get the impression that, like, you know, wow, like things that my mom did, I'm doing, and things that I'm doing, like she also went through. If there was kind of like any sort of sense of like a cycle in that, you know, of experience.
No, I feel like we are like in some ways as far as our like we both have like a weird kind of sense of humor about stuff and like how we deal with stuff, even darker stuff, like we can have a sense of humor about it, like we are like in that kind of way, I guess, but we're very different in other ways. I played the role of like having to take care of my mom in a sense, you know? So I never looked at it like, oh, I see. But I actually quit drinking when I discovered the tapes. And I think we both were like in the sense where alcohol's not good for us. And I wasn't like reckless or anything with alcohol, never like blacked out and stuff like that. But I had where my mood, it would affect my mood and it'd make me really sad. And it just, alcohol never agreed with me. And my mom struggles with alcohol still. So I knew I had to quit because I feel like I have that streak where alcohol, you know, it's just not good for me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. But we're very different
a lot otherwise. And she had to deal with a lot more with her, you know, Tourette's and OCD, like those struggles, like, I can only understand from like outside point of view, like her pain, you know?
Yeah. Because you didn't have to deal with those types of things.
No, like I had OCD and stuff, but I could never, I've been able to manage it. And I wasn't able to, I mean, they wanted to prescribe me medication for OCD when I was a kid, but then when they did all these tests and stuff, and then they said they couldn't like give me medication because they said that I would develop tics. So, but mine was always very manageable. I don't think she could have been able to be without medication, but I've been able to be okay. It was always like very mild. And I had more like the talk therapy was like enough for me. It was able to help me just like get through. But I still at the level of what she had to go through, mine was like on a milder scale, you know?
Yeah. Are OCD and Tourette's always connected or?
They seem to be intertwined. Usually when someone has Tourette's, there is like OCD. Usually they have the OCD, the repeating and stuff like that is like an OCD like tendency as well. So I guess they usually have both. Yeah. And that was pretty crazy when I went, and, you know, because teachers were like, they had to do all these tests and stuff. And then I had OCD. I was doing like these like small ritualistic things or whatever I can vaguely remember. And they were going to give me, and also ADD, like every kid in the 90s, like that was so-called drinking too much soda and stuff. They tried to prescribe them Ritalin, right? So they were going to put me on Ritalin, but then they were like, well, we can't because she could develop Tourette's and tics. So.
Oh, no way. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't feel like I really had ADD or whatever. I feel like they were really like, just let's put this kid on, you know, like, cause they did that to a lot of kids. This kid's overactive, or they're, you know, jumping around. Let's like put them on Ritalin. It was just like that 1, 2, 3 for kids. It was fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you don't hear about that as much anymore.
It's experimenting on us.
Kids have other problems now, and maybe are over prescribed medications in other ways. Well, I'm glad you didn't end up, you know, I'm glad that you ended up finding a solution, or at least being able to manage your situation. Always, yeah, with talk therapy.
It's never been like my rituals are always just like habits that are like the only time it got bad was I trickle mania I developed, in where I started pulling out my hair from the back, and I didn't realize till I like went to like a salon. They're like, oh, you're they grabbed a mirror and I had like a big hole missing, and I just thought I was twirling my hair. And now I still do it, but I don't like yank the hair out. I don't know. So I have it mild, but it's like manageable, and it's never like something that gets in the way of me trying to do things.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it seems like if somebody points it out to you, you're able to manage it.
Yeah. And it's not like painful, like how I see my mom in pain, you know, from it. It's not where it stops me from like holding a job and stuff, you know, like she can never work and stuff, because it would just be, she'd be like having too many movements and like scared she's gonna scream something, you know. So I can't even, you know, compare what I had to what she has.
I mean, that's really terrifying, being in that position where you can't lead a normal life because of something happening with you that you can't help. And
exactly.
Yeah. Wow. I don't want to leave on a downer note, but that's really all the questions that I have.
Oh, that's fine.
Thank you for coming on and chatting with me.
Thank you so much. You asked a lot of like good questions.
Well, cool. I'm glad that you had fun answering my questions. And I hope they didn't get too personal. Yeah.
Personal's fine. I mean, you know. Like, you know, it started out personal, so it's, I have to be ready to like answer some of those questions.
Well, like I said, I appreciate you going there with me. Cool. So I'm gonna stop recording now.